And we're back, welcome once again to another episode of Mike, Mike, and Oscar. A different half-episode, right? We're not doing a regular original song half-episode. We're doing an actual substantive half-episode.
Almost TV, but it's not TV.
That's right, because it's HBO. And that's what we're doing today. That was a nice setup by you. Nice job.
Once in a while.
We're doing a on-demand review. So we're going to kind of take one of these premium channels, HBO, Showtime, Cinemax, etc., and we're going to go through what titles are available to you on-demand right now, the movies that you can watch right now if you have that kind of cable subscription, if you have HBO Go, that kind of access to it. We're going to go through the titles, just review some of those that are available on-demand. Today will be HBO, and we thought it'd be a good idea to kind of delve into them and see what we would and wouldn't watch.
Absolutely. I think they're coming out with a lot of stuff that's interesting, that's very intriguing, that's
absolutely,
up for Emmys, like Spielberg says, in many stretches with Andre the Giant and other, and Whitney last year, and a lot of their original movies are really cool with big names like Paterno, Al Pacino. They did Bessie with Queen Latifah a few years back.
Fahrenheit 451 just came out recently.
They've had big names starring in their original content, but they've also been showcasing a lot of the old Oscar movies. A lot of you are watch at home people, so I think it works. I think it fits. We're doing like a mid-year summation of everything that's been released from HBO. I set out to do like an all premium channel kind of episode.
Too much.
And it was too much for HBO, so we're just going to cap it right here at HBO.
And HBO, you say what you want about what you think of premium channels and cable packages in general, but HBO, when a headline movie makes a lot of waves, they tend to generally head to HBO once it's time for them to hit the cable station. So we're going to see a lot of big names as we go through these titles here today.
Of the premium channels, if Showtime's like the Golden Globes, HBO's like the Oscars.
All right, let's cancel Showtime then.
I like Showtime.
I do too. Well, cards on the table.
Then again, we'll really like Showtime in like 10 years when we're in our 40s. I think every father loves Showtime. If you go to a picnic and there are fathers, the conversation turns into, hey, did you watch Billions last night?
Everybody loves, I have to get into it. I have friends that swear by that show. I'm going to watch it. I'm going to binge on it. I have not yet seen it, but I imagine it's just going to be a twisted tunnel for me because I'm a big guy about corruption and manipulation.
Yeah.
And that seems to be all that show is about.
But they all pretend not to watch The Affair either, but they all watch The Affair and they're like giddy over The Affair.
Because they're all raised on The Wire and they love Dominic Cooper. Yeah. So let's get into this HBO On Demand half episode. We're going to review titles. We're just going to kind of go through it quickly, title by title, give our thoughts. We might hit on some of these we've already mentioned in past episodes. We'll highlight those for you, talk about what we've seen and some new stuff, obviously, that we've grown to know about them, where they're going in the future, stuff like that, and just see where we can have some fun with this.
Start out right in our wheelhouse here. Andre the Giant documentary about the famous wrestler, the French-born wrestler.
Not familiar.
Mike is a huge wrestling fan.
That's underselling it, but yes, I happen to peruse the professional
guy
wrestling.
Who likes wrestling. No, I'm kidding.
Also true. This one, I haven't heard a lot of buzz about this as far as Oscars go. We kind of are, I kind of am the only one pushing this for an Oscar push, but it's a touching documentary and it really brings to life, look, even if you don't care about the professional wrestling world at all, and I know that's got a kind of a stigma and a lot of people are hands off with it, but it's an interesting story. It's a fascinating story about really a once in a lifetime guy, an athlete.
A rare defect, a rare disease he had that he kept growing his entire life.
It was gigantism, an actual disease.
That was fascinating to watch how that evolved over the years, how much bigger he got. The ways in which he got bigger was strange.
He was literally larger than life, and then it shows you pictures of his home that he grew up in. It's interviews with his family members and stuff, and you see this tiny bed that he was forced to live in and all the hardships he had throughout his life of traveling on the road, and how in the 70s and 80s they didn't make things suited for a man of his size in hotels and whatnot.
I give them a lot of credit because they really stay on topic for their little snippets. It's almost like a collection of like 50 vignettes about this guy's life. It doesn't flow as well as some other documentaries, but they're going to talk about his drinking, right, for 10 minutes. They're going to talk about his upbringing for 10 minutes. They're going to talk about all these different phases of his career.
There's a 5-minute section about him farting.
Yes. that was where I was like, all right, this is in the fun and games portion of the script.
Right.
For all you Save the Cat, you know, screenwriter guru fans out there, this is that portion right at the 28-minute
mark. Gene Okerlund's best quote in the whole, big man. big fart.
35-minute mark, I should say. I should have got that timestamp right. Sorry. Save the cat people. But yeah, big farts.
We're doing a lot with cats. It's save the cat, shave the cat, hide the cat.
I had an argument with somebody else recently. Like, the hero's supposed to save the cat to show that he's empathetic or sympathetic to the mm-hmm. audience. What is that cat doing in those trees?
I'm a dog guy, so screw
I know. Right, me too.
Yeah, right.
Me too. Yeah, so. That cat is eating baby birds. Have I said this before in the podcast? That cat is a killer, a serial murderer.
So it's an M. Night Shyamalan cat is what you're saying. It's a twist.
Yeah.
All right.
But that's supposed to humanize the Superman guy who gets the cat out of the tree. Okay. Well,
we're not going to be climbing trees to save cats. That's all we learned.
I love the WrestleMania stuff in here with Hulk Hogan. I thought that was where this documentary really started to flow better because that was a longer segment.
It shines the light on wrestling's fake. Wrestling's so fake. Well, yes, wrestling is predetermined when you get to the professional wrestling stage, but there is so much realism in the build-up to a match, the orchestration of a match, how a match is actually going to end, and Hulk Hogan, I mean, Hulk Hogan is a name that's as big as Elvis around the world, basically.
Right.
And he's here so real and so raw talking in how genuinely scared he was of the man, Andre the Giant, because he knew his life was basically in Andre's hands in the biggest match of all time.
Well, yeah. I mean, think about it. If it's a movie, if it's a play, every one of your actors, your thespians, are world-class athletes, rare one-of-a-kind people. The director essentially is the referee.
Yeah. Hey, and you're not wrong.
And they're improvising much of it.
Mm-hmm.
And these actors walking into that match in particular were like, okay, what are we supposed to do? Are you going to let me win?
Yeah, is he really going to manhandle me? Are you going to be okay with me? Yeah.
How does this movie end? How does this story end?
Am I going to be paralyzed at the end of this?
That was fascinating. It is. And all the while pulling off the performance art of it, it's incredible to me. With a stadium full of how many thousand fans? 200?
They claim 93,000, but it was probably around 70, but still 70,000 people. Yeah.
Incredible.
So I think we can both safely say this is a watch, even if you're not a professional wrestling guy.
Yeah, Bill. Shout out to Bill Simmons and the Ringer people. He's the producer of this. Yeah. I don't know if I said that. Really like the job he did. He did the 30 for 30 series on ESPN for many years, originated that. Now he's doing stuff for HBO. We got Courtside at the NBA Finals. That's really
Have you watched that?
Yes. Really good. If you like music to visuals, just montage, good old-fashioned montage, that is like a 50-minute music video of a great playlist of songs and just NFL films level HD, perfectly recorded video of the finals.
Check that out. That's all. He really does. Bill Simmons, he's my favorite writer, but he really does have a great touch with the real life subjects. And whenever he gets on TV, as long as he himself is not on TV, apparently he had a little issue.
Yeah, he isn't great on TV himself because he's like, well, he's probably like we will be when we get on YouTube, where we look like we're half crying, half
hello
about to puke.
I'm Mike.
This is my sex face and my YouTube face. Whoops. I don't know how to act. I don't know what to do with my hands. Yeah, the guy's not a TV guy. He's a radio guy.
Right. And a phenomenal writer. It. I guess I'll take the lead on this one. But it's the remake of the 1990s miniseries. I think it was on ABC. The John Ritter was in the old one. Of course, a legendary performance of Pennywise the Clown played by
Bill Skarsgård
in this one, playing the Tim Curry role from 1990. This was one of my highest rated movies of 2017. When we had our first episode, I think I had it at number one, or it was my highest graded. I think I had it at a 91 back then, highest graded one of the year that time. If you're into the old one, I don't see how you wouldn't like this one. If you're into horror movies, this was one of the newest, scariest movies of all times until the next five came out. But it was worthy of acclaim in that it was a refreshing remake.
Yes.
Great cast of kids, which is something that's very rare.
The dialogue flows like a rated R Stranger Things, which is really cool.
Yeah, that's a great point.
The kids are always breaking one another's balls. They're the losers club. So it's weird how they interact with all the adults, because all the adults are like evil. Like the fruits of the devil.
Finn Wolfhard of Stranger Things is one of the characters in this one. Sophia Lillis, I thought, was worthy of Academy consideration because she was, to me, outstanding. And
she's going to be in Sharp Objects too.
Oh, is she? That's awesome. I didn't know that.
But she's Amy Adams.
You know, she to me was everything. And I said this a couple times. She to me was everything that everyone praised Wonder Woman for being. And I thought Wonder Woman had some flaws and some faults. And Sophia Lillis was this hardcore feminist hero in this movie. She was awesome. I thought
strong character. Yeah.
Your intrigue for this is only going to rise as you get closer to the second one. Part two is going to be coming out. Some big names attached to that. Bill Hader, Jessica Chastain, James McAvoy is in that one.
Sure.
Isaiah Mustafa, who's the guy from the Old Spice commercials. Lady, look at me. Now look at your man. Now look at me.
He's voiced a lot of audiobooks for Stephen King, I want to say. I think that's the guy.
Oh, well, that matches up.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So, again, whether you have interest in just a horror movie, whether you have interest in seeing a quality remake, how a remake should be handled, whether you have interest in the 1990 miniseries and want to see it updated, or if you have interest in something that had a lot of hype and is going to have a lot of hype going towards part two, this is definitely a watch for me. I don't want to speak for you.
Out this Saturday, I'm probably going to rewatch it.
Yeah, without question. I've held off rewatching it, but I did buy that Target special edition of it, and it's sitting comfortably next to my copy of Legion on DVD.
Now, you keep peppering in those Legion jokes. It's never going to die, folks. Paul Bettany stars in Legion.
We might have to do a special on that.
It is a shit movie that I made fun of Mike for. Probably in episode 3, which hopefully none of you have gone back and listened to because our audio quality wasn't great. And we're still finding our footing back in our early episodes. But yeah.
Currently as human beings and men.
Yeah, true. Dunkirk, Christopher Nolan, Harry Styles, Tom Hardy, Kenneth Branagh. A lot of well-known British, Scottish, Irish thespians are basically running from unseen Nazis, U-boats and dive bombers and the
You really don't see a lot of Nazi army men and soldiers in this, huh?
Bullets just coming at you. Yeah. So it's amazing how he kind of does Spielberg's rule where you don't see the monster until an hour in the movie.
It's not something that ever hit me until you were mentioning it just now. That's pretty incredible.
If you're looking for a suspense movie, if you want like a PG-13 war movie that you can kind of watch while there are other people in the house that's not going to turn into Saving Private Ryan and just basically consume the whole house and everybody has to cower in their own corners, right? Like, this is a movie that can be observed in relative public,
yeah,
in the privacy of your own home.
I would stand by that. That's
so it's a PG-13 war.
It's an okay family movie. There's nothing out, you know, there's no sex, there's no gratuitous violence. I wouldn't watch this with surround sound unless you have a bunker to actually dive into.
Yeah, it might give you some after effects.
We've gushed about, but the Hans Zimmer score on this.
Yeah, don't listen to that score if you're on your own or if you're driving, because you may just get a little herky-jerky.
Yeah, maybe
there.
Just don't listen to it, you know?
It's like,
unless you're alone in a room and you have nothing to do the rest of the day.
Yeah, we've gushed over Tom Hardy's performance. We've gushed over the cinematography, visual effects, editing, sound, of course, and the score back in our Oscar days. It is a carryover from Oscar season. You can listen to our full OSP on this. I think
you were incredibly high on this during last year, during the awards portion.
This time last year, I was super high on it. It was a one-of-a-kind IMAX experience. So seeing, if you have like a miniature screen that you're going to watch this HBO Go property on, I wouldn't do it. I would wait till you're in front of a big screen TV at least, I would say. But it is up there right now, HBO.
Yeah, you're not going to go wrong, obviously, watching a Christopher Nolan movie at any time. And this is... Mike is totally right. This happens to be one where, yes, it's a war movie. Yes, the subject matter is very heavy, but it's also relatively safe and innocuous for a large viewing audience.
Now, I've never heard of this movie before. You're going to do, what does that say? Get Out?
It's pronounced Get Out.
Get Out?
It's emphasis on the T. You don't need me to talk anymore about this movie, all right? I think I've slipped in Get Out and how wonderful it is and how amazing it is in every episode so far, and this is going to be
your number one movie last
year. 80-something. This movie, I said it at the time it came out. I've said it throughout the award season last year, and I've said it ad nauseum since. I think there was a huge mistake made in the Oscars last year. I think Shape of Water was fine. It was a nice safe pick, the compromise pick that Mike and I talk about all the time, but... we're going to look back at the 2017 Academy Awards, 2018, whatever you want to call it, Academy Awards, in 10 years, and we're going to say, at least to me, how the hell did Get Out not win Best Picture? Because, especially if you take it in the time capsule that 2017 turned into,
right,
the Me Too movement, the Time's Up movements, all these big powerful gender movements, all these big power movements about race
equality, sure.
Yeah, this was such a great picture and a snapshot of all those things and what's wrong with certain aspects of America. And even those people that say, I'm not racist, I have black friends. This is why you're racist, you know? Like, it shines such a spotlight on such a niche, unique part of every elitist mindset.
Right.
And it brought it to light in a way that everybody appreciated. There was no outcry against this movie.
So how about the rewatch value? Now, we're not channel surfing dudes. Are you a channel surfing kind of guy? Or
not if I'm watching a movie, no.
I mean, I'm more of an on-demand. I kind of choose and pick.
Yeah.
I kind of plan. I have OCD. I have issues that are mentally fixed in my head.
Right.
So
I have no idea where you're going with this, by the way. So
if it was 10 years ago and we didn't have on demand, I think I would stop and watch this movie more often than I have. Even saying that, I've probably seen it like 5 or 6 times now.
Well, that's what I was going to follow up with. I think I've seen this movie 5 times myself, and every time you watch it all the way through. I watch it all the way through.
Correct.
You can't turn it off. To me, I just think it's such a landmark picture, and it's one of those, you know, we talked about how The Lord of the Rings was a moment in time. We talked about how different pictures have kind of been a turning point for movies. I really think if the momentum that all these causes in 2017 had carry out, and they start at the end of 2016, they're going through, if they turn into these big landmark movements like I hope they do in the social world and the economic world, etc., we're going to be able to look back and point to that movie as like, wow, that was really indicative of the times of change and,
right.
and was one of the things that spurred change.
I think one of the core features of a horror movie like this is the suspense of it, right? Like, suspense working in this film could detract from a rewatch for a lot of other horror movies. Like, unless you really love that formula, that familiarity with the setup of the anxiety inducement, if you like feeling that way, and then a movie will give you a spectacle or give you whatever in terms of the goods delivered to solve that lead up, this movie pays off a lot of those conventions with jokes.
Yeah.
With satire.
It's funny.
With a lot of really well-established filmmaking prowess. So with a great score. There's so many things that you can say, I love how he did that sequence with the deer.
Yeah.
Early in the movie. That's not something we ever commented on during our 17
totally right.
episodes where we kind of featured this one, right?
Right.
So this movie has a lot of rewatch value, despite the fact that it's a suspense movie. It's kind of like a Hitchcock movie in that way, where there's so
something
many rewards
before, yeah.
for your rewatch. And it's not just the big jokes. It's not just the horror movie pows. You have a lot of little details to notice.
It's a point you've brought up a bunch of times. How difficult that tightrope is to walk of a horror comedy that has impact in society, that's societally relevant, if
Good.
That's a term that I just made up.
I think it works.
That doesn't offend anyone, doesn't really have a whole lot of backlash for such a serious subject. I mean, it's the things Jordan Peele pulled off in his first movie, essentially, solo directorial, unbelievable. So it's a skip for both of us.
Girls Trip is another movie currently featured on HBO Go there. Tiffany Haddish crapped. She crapped? No, she cracked me
just
up.
Takes a shit in her hand for 90 minutes.
There is some poopy humor in this movie, which is funny. But no, she cracked me up consistently. It is funny. It gets very, very sappy. It gets very formulaic and conventional in terms of like friends becoming friends again, reuniting. Then, all of a sudden a controversy happens and they're not friends for a couple scenes and they're friends again in a big, glorious reunion. So that's the movie. That's the genre. Right?
Right.
It is one of those vacation movies with a group of friends.
And now, yet it was substantive enough where Tiffany Haddish got a Golden Globe nomination out of it.
She is so versatile in the kind of ways she makes you laugh and all the little goofy things she does throughout. She is just showcasing all of her talents throughout this movie now. I thought while this movie was in theaters, based on the poster of just a man butt, right?
Yes.
It's like a giant man with his underwear on. I thought it was like Magic Mike. I thought it was just like strip club lady trip tour.
No.
Here. So, listen, despite the fact that Magic Mike may be my self-proclaimed nickname, I have not seen it or its sequel. So I just wasn't going to go in for a male stripper movie. This is not that.
Right.
So
it's a lot to unpack in that statement, but I'm with
you.
For
all the guys out there, the heterosexual men out there that are afraid of this movie or have been afraid of this movie, there's no reason for it.
That was a loaded review. There's a lot going on there.
I laid bare a lot of my biases and prejudices. Oh, I apologize. Mike, Fahrenheit 451, original movie with Michael B. Jordan, Michael Shannon.
Yeah, nice cast. Great chemistry between Jordan and Shannon. I think it's kind of tough to judge this one.
I've not seen it.
It came out in the same year that the Blade Runner reboot came out, so it's like it was kind of up against it in that post-apocalyptic kind of futuristic take about authority and society, and you have giant pictures of things in this futuristic
world. Yeah, Blade Runner is the opposite of an authoritarian. Sorry, I'm quibbling with it. I like Blade Runner. It's not Blade Runner. No. Well, I've seen the original.
My point is just from an artistically visual perspective, okay. It's kind of has similarities, and it was obviously not going to get the recognition because it was done with a bigger budget and pulled off more astutely in Blade Runner. So you take that for what it's worth. The storyline is kind of, I don't know that it translates very well to a movie.
I heard from my brother who watched this after reading the book in his high school senior English class. I was like, what did you think of Fahrenheit 451? He's like, all the stuff I liked in the book, all those big moments that were cool to me, they didn't include them in the movie.
Yeah, I don't think it translates well to a movie. Not that I've read the book, but I know what it's about.
My brother's middle name is also Damien because he's an evil... evil kid.
Just listening. Throwing that in. You're getting a lot off your chest
likes,
this episode.
He likes when evil shit happens in movies. That's just...
Now, that said, Michael B. Jordan's phenomenal. Michael Shannon is the ultimate dick in every role he has. The chemistry between the two of them, I've said a couple times.
Does he blink his eyes ever?
A couple. Maybe once. Once or squints, twice. I think. Yeah, he squints. Gets a little water going. Okay. But
he's a lizard.
Exactly. It blinks sideways is what it is. The chemistry between the two of them is really nice, and they have a lot of scenes together because they're the two, you know, it's a protagonist-antagonist type deal. I would say it's worth a watch if you have a free hour and a half. It's quick. It's, you know, it's not bad. The ending is kind of blah. The twists in it are kind of blah. They don't really work for me, but like I said, I think the source material is tough to adapt to a quick hour and a half TV movie. But yeah, I think it's worth seeing for the play, the chemistry between those two leads, and I think they're both definitely worthy of acclaim. Maybe not in these roles, but they're names that you want to hear more of from the Academy.
And you hate books.
Yes.
Do you still hate books?
I was rooting whenever they were burned. I was like, yeah! It's
whatever. You still hate books? You didn't answer my question.
Of course I hate books. Who likes books?
It failed then. It failed. It didn't do it to adaptation justice, I guess.
You know what it reminded me of? Actually, a lot. The Book of Eli.
Yeah. I mean, it's Equilibrium, right? I mean, do you ever see Equilibrium? Christian Bale?
I couldn't get
Tay Diggs?
It. I've seen
yeah,
part
it's not
of it.
Great.
Could, yeah.
The fighting's kind of cool, but...
Yeah. But to me, it was the Book of Eli, which is amazing that I'm not saying Eli Manning, but yeah. It reminded me a lot. It had a lot of similarity. If you like the Book of Eli...
Book of Eli, yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah. Check it out. Quick hour and a half.
Well, Eli likes books. But you still don't like books. I'll stop speaking, period.
Please.
Okay, Blade Runner 2049. Listen, do you need a sci-fi epic movie? Yeah, I guess Fahrenheit 451, you didn't get your fix with that
right.
One. Do you have some patience to watch kind of a slow burn? You know, do you like a Led Zeppelin song? Do you like a crescendo that really works?
You're bringing the heat today.
Like great visuals? I mean, the cinematography and the visual effects. This is another movie. Don't watch it on your phone, on your tablet. Don't watch it on a tiny screen where you can take HBO Go and be mobile with it. You got to watch it on your big screen TV that you bought for a big price. This is one to showcase, you know, all your new toys in terms of your visuals.
I have a feeling you would find a lot of people that agree with you about that. And just the scope of the aesthetic of this movie.
Yeah, if you just bought like a new Bose sound system, surround sound, this is the one to watch. Just to make a night of this movie on HBO Go. There, it was a top 10 of mine last year. Ryan Gosling's very strong. I think the story's fairly unique for this kind of a premise. It is like the original. It is slow moving, but Denis Villeneuve. Sorry. He's awesome in it in terms of his directorial prowess. I wish it made more money in theaters. It kind of made
some
on the back end.
Yeah, this is probably going to be it for the Blade Runner franchise, right?
Yeah, it didn't make enough, but he was true to the original. The original was that slow burn, very philosophical. This one's more of a mystery, and I think the screenwriting kind of works there, or at least it worked for me. However, you're not going to get like the Last Jedi like spectacles. You're not going to get that in terms of huge fights in that regard, right. Even though you get a couple decent hand to hand.
It's a tension. It's supposed to be playing on the tension and the thrilling of the building, it's right?
Atmospheric. If you like sci-fi, you know, the mood that you get from all that futuristic advertising,
you're there for the visual. I mean, it won cinematography, it won best visual effects. You're there for the visuals for the most part.
Ana de Armas, awesome in this. This girl can act extremely well. She's gorgeous, but she's also the AI in this movie, and she does a wonderful job playing off Gosling for most of it. I'm a big fan. Bautista's in the beginning. You have a lot of great actors really working through this. I'm into Denis Villeneuve getting big budgets. I like Arrival. He got just saw that.
I just saw that. Loved it.
And I if you liked Arrival and you're patient, but if you go into this movie thinking it's going to be a rock'em sock'em Star Wars The Last Jedi type one spectacle after another with a Indiana Jones type tempo, Star Wars type tempo, this is not that. This is a thinking man's sci-fi kind of deal.
Cool. Good to know.
Mike, you want to review Wonder Woman for us?
No, want is a strong word there. I get the hype, and obviously the best DC property that studio has made yet by far.
Right.
I understand the love for it, and I understand that on its face it's this big feminist hero, and that she stands for good, and she's a role model. Gal Gadot is awesome. Yeah. All those things are true, but to me, I haven't heard this referenced enough, and the glaring deficiency of this movie is that she has everything mansplained to her by Chris Pine's character. And yes, the easy explanation for that is that, well, she's, you know, an Amazon, she's not from this planet, and blah, blah, blah. I get it, but there's a lot of ways that they could have undone things without Chris Pine being attached at her hip and trying to explain the way of the world to her.
Thematically, that's an issue. This movie's strange to me because anytime you're writing a screenplay, anytime you're analyzing a three-act structure, Act Two is the one with the most landmines.
Sure.
You have a high degree of difficulty getting through that middle stage. I mean, that's also the meat of your movie. But at the same time, it's the hardest part to pull off. Act Two in this movie was awesome.
Yeah.
All the fish out of water stuff, all the fight scenes in the middle of this movie going through kind of that plunge into Act Three, I thought was phenomenal. There's even an extremely emotional moment in this movie that just worked on me as good as anything I saw last year.
Yeah, and without getting into spoiler, there's set pieces, there's fight scenes in this that have pretty cool payoffs. They look marvelous. I mean, you know, marvelous is probably not the right word for a DC movie, but
deceivalous.
Yeah. Sorry. But to me, you could, if you're taking this just in stride and you're just looking at what's on screen, you don't put too much thought behind it, you just want to be entertained by a superhero flick, it's great. It really is. To me, digging deeper, I had some issues with it. I still have issues with it, even though I've seen it a couple times. I tried to get it, you know, work myself around it. I just can't. But I still think it's a watch.
I think Percy Jackson and the Lightning Thief, or whatever the hell that movie was called.
You nailed the title.
Thoroughly fatigued me in terms of Greek mythology, Roman mythology.
Oh, okay. Yeah, sure. So this
movie starting with mythology.
Yeah.
It was just kind of silly to me. Like, all right,
I feel bad that we're not as high on this movie as other people seem to be.
Right.
I do feel bad about that, but I just can't help it.
I think that Act Two, if it works for you as well as it worked for me, and you're not an asshole like I am, then you might just enjoy that so much.
Well, see, the biggest problem for me is
that you forgive Act One and Act Three.
The biggest problem for me is at the what happens after the antagonist has fallen, you know, like that's, I have issues. I don't want to go get into him because spoilers, I don't want to talk about it, but that's the biggest issue as far as her having things mansplained and whatnot, but take it for what it's worth. Like I said, if you're in the mood just to kill a couple hours, you want to see some good ass kicking, you want to see a good feminist hero, because she is a good feminist hero.
I think my favorite action scene of the year.
Yeah, I mean, it's beautiful.
Go back to our superlatives episode where we kind of did all our favorites, all our best ofs. You know, Wonder Woman shows up for us.
Yeah. Yeah, no question.
Paterno's our next one. Al Pacino plays Joe Pa, Penn State, longtime football coach. I love the sports in this movie. I thought they did a great job with going intercutting between the actual footage of the Penn State football games. I thought that was a strong choice to use the actual footage and then to go to the sideline, all the sideline stuff. They got like characters and actors who looked like the real people. I don't know who they used, but it really, really worked for me. I liked all the behind the scenes coaching stuff. I mean, it felt like real coaches doing real work all day, every day kind of stuff. And it felt like an old man coach. I've worked with old man coaches before where they're just like, they're very, very stubborn. They have a,
ways.
I mean, they're pen and paper, pencil and paper working on their game plans there. Don't bother me. Just that stubborn old man coach. And a lot of them do well, but like Joe Pa was having that, he was having a great year. This is a tough watch because of its subject matter, because of Jerry Sandusky scandal. Also, you know, it is not one of those movies that's going to be a feel-good movie, to say the least.
No, it is not. I had two thoughts on it when I watched it. One, that the final scene, the interaction of Joe Pa with his wife is such a freaking gut punch when she brings up a hypothetical, and it's just such nothing I had ever thought of before. I thought it was really creative. I thought it was really important. I thought it got the point of the movie across.
The payoffs of this movie really do work, and it keeps you guessing for most of it.
And two, Pacino may not have a fastball anymore, but he's like got a CC Sabathia slider where he can still get guys swinging.
He knows how to work.
Yeah, I mean, if he brings it, if he still brings what he has for his A game, you get a more than quality performance. I thought he was really good in this.
I think it's a strong choice for him to do a lot of these HBO movies over the years where he can just really do the over the top thing, and be that, you know, from Spectre, Phil Spector to Kevorkian.
Yeah, I thought the Kevorkian movie was great.
This is some of his best work over the last few years. I know he did that movie about the song and dance man, Danny Collins.
There you go.
Christopher Plummer, Annette Bening. That was Bobby Cannavale. Great movie. And Dan Fogelman directed it. I like him. And Brooklyn guy. I know a lot of people who know him. He's a hell of a talent.
It's a good thing you don't drop names on this podcast whenever you get the chance.
I know people who know him. I don't know him. But
my good friend Meryl Streep and
people who like him like our podcast a little bit.
Sure. Yeah. All right.
Hello, people. It was a half name drop. Whatever. All right. Paterno's a worthy watch. Riley Keough.
I always thought it was Keough.
But I can't speak Gaelic. I think she's pretty good in a lot of things. Yeah, I mean, she did that Starz show, the girlfriend experience. She's
I wanted to see that. I did this. There's too much good TV. We got to cut it down. Get back into like four channels.
How much TV are we watching lately? I know. Barely any.
Yeah, it's all going by because of all the movies. Yeah,
like I'm behind on like 10 shows.
Let's cut this down. Let's bring back the six channel thing.
HBO's got original movies. All what subsidized. Am I supposed to do?
I don't care that all these people are going to lose their jobs. I just want things how I want them.
But Paternal for me is like a solid B movie. You know, the B85. I mean, all day for me. It's a worthwhile movie. So
it's in the upper echelon of things that are available, I think, without question.
Cool. Zen Diaries of Gary Shandling.
I watched the first of two. There's two-hour documentaries about this. My God, bring a tissue box if you watch this.
It is emotional.
I'm of the opinion that documentaries are inherently manipulative because I think everybody has a story to tell. Right. And a lot of that story, if you take any one person's particular mindset, it's going to be dramatic. Mm-hmm. Because life is dramatic. And it's all, you know, we're all just trying to figure out what the hell we're doing here. And Gary Shandling was no different to that narrative. He was kind of a guy that was betrayed by close friends and kind of lost his way a little bit and was trying to find himself anew through, and the reason it's called the Zen Diary is he went through Buddhism and went through, you know, interacted with a lot of monks and tried to find inner peace and happiness.
Judd Apatow, his protege, essentially, become a big name director, obviously, gets all of Gary's friends, all of their friends, to interview in this movie after Gary's died, passed on, and Apatow makes a four-hour doc on this. I think the comedy ratio is solid. For as emotional as this is, I'm laughing at a lot of the jokes from those TV shows he's done, from his stand-up. I thought that really worked.
It's important because he was always a comedian first.
Yeah.
But I think the message, and part of the message, was the comedy never defined him to himself. And yeah, he was just naturally funny because that's how his mind worked. But he was, it was a guy in pain in a lot of ways.
Right.
And he was just trying a way to satiate that pain or numb it. And he went through tragedy. I mean, he you start off this interview or this documentary with
his brother.
He learned about his brother was dead at an early So he never really wanted to cope with his emotions, and all about him trying to find that against the backdrop of, my God, this was a hilarious guy.
You know, I heard comedy was a defense mechanism somewhere. I guess this is where. All right, makes sense. I really like this documentary. It's not going to be up for Oscars as far as we know.
It's a love letter. It's not, it's not for public consumption. It's basically a guy's love letter to his lost friend.
If you're, I think the fans of Gary Shandling, but someone like me, I've never followed his career.
Same here.
I never watched those shows. I was too young. It was before, way before my time, really. I went back and watched some of those shows.
Yeah, I want to. I haven't.
I'm through the first season on Larry Sanders' show. Had to rewatch that. It has its moments. There's one episode with Carol Burnett. I almost called her Mary Tyler Moore. Carol Burnett made me laugh so hard. One of my hardest laughs of the year.
Oh, good.
So I'm thrilled with this show, and that kind of keeps, because there's some downs. There's some 90s stuff that's, all right, that's too 90s. I can't laugh at that anymore. The Shah of Iran. Blah, blah, blah. Come on. All right, that was a joke. Dennis Miller jokes back then.
Who cares about Iran and North Korea and all these passe countries?
This is not relevant anymore. All that stuff is in it, but it's still a fun rewatch.
It holds up for the most part.
Yeah, it's so well written. And it's that behind the scenes. It's really that mockumentary for comedy shows that never been done before. So it's that trendsetter.
Yeah, breaking ground.
That trailblazer.
It's definitely something I want to check out as well. Now, you've seen both parts of this?
Yes.
How was the second part? I haven't seen the second part
yet. I enjoy it. It's very fulfilling.
Is it the same kind of tempo as the first? Is it more about just his life in general?
Yes, it gets a little heavier, obviously.
Right.
It goes into his latter part of his life. But I really like Gary Shandling, even during that stage where he's saying, Hail Hydra, in the Marvel movies.
Which they touched on in the first part. Yeah, they did.
They do the comedians in cars getting coffee thing with Jerry Seinfeld. Mm-hmm. That's a very funny episode. A lot of those are funny. I watched that whole thing on Netflix. Talk about Netflix binges.
If you are interested in comedy in general, you got to be prepared for an emotional story. I think a watch from both of us.
Mm-hmm.
The Tale. We both saw this one.
Tough.
We both didn't want to see this one.
Tough to watch.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Good God. I couldn't. I had to fast forward. I had to.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
That little girl staring in at that grown man, and that's happening.
So it's a movie, an HBO movie. Laura Dern's in it. It's a biopic from the point of view of the director-writer about her being abused, sexually abused as a young girl.
Right.
And it's incredibly difficult to watch.
Not directed and shot by the crew from Rambling Rose. Because if that was happening, because
it would have been an art house thing.
Crimes would have been crimes committed. This movie's about pedophilia, and it stars Elizabeth Debicki, Laura Dern, Ellen Burstyn, and Common. Common does a great job in this movie.
I didn't even recognize that it was him.
Super duper heavy subject matter. Yeah, I mean, it's awful. I thought he did a nice job. I mean, he's having serious domestic arguments with Laura Dern, who is a basket case, rightfully so, in this movie because of her trauma sustained as a kid. Thinking back to it. I thought these actors, in terms of hiding all the subtext, keeping you guessing, they do a phenomenal job. I would love to see Elizabeth Debicki get hold of a better script, a better project down the line. I think she's finally going to get that with Widows. She's done the Cloverfield Paradox. She's done a lot of different things that I haven't liked the movies, but I've liked her in it.
Yeah.
This is one of those situations. Obviously, Laura Dern elevates things. Ellen Burstyn elevates the content. This movie is very contemplative, and it takes too long to get to what it's doing, and that's a problem. Like, there's bad scenes in this movie.
I don't disagree, but I also don't know that I can think of a movie that had this subject matter told from a perspective. I mean, it brings up a lot of questions about the victim in this situation, and it's not for the victim. It's not all cut and dry that it was a bad thing as it was happening at the time. And I've never seen a movie address that way. And it
brings you on that journey in a way. That psychological journey. It almost feels like this is a novel.
Right.
In many ways.
And it toys with, you think when you hear pedophilia, you know, in your head, you have this vision of like, oh, it's so terrible. It's so gross. It's a Brightline thing.
Yeah.
And this kind of brings you into that world of how it could have happened and how it wasn't.
How insidious.
Yeah, really, how manipulative it must have been, and how terrible not only the crime is, but the psychological deterrence and impact that it has on the victim.
And to me, knowing what it's about, it's just like one increasingly gross scene after another, right, until the midpoint where you actually get the crime. It's just so gross.
Yeah, it is.
You fast forward it, like drag girl with the dragon tattoo style. I couldn't hang.
It's incredible.
I know difficult. You said you were behind your laptop. He's like,
I kept looking down.
You were hiding behind your laptop.
I kept looking down. But the payoff, I mean, the performance, the payoff for Laura Dern in that scene where she actually, you know, comes back as an adult, I thought she was awesome.
Autobiographical from the filmmaker. Mm-hmm. So it is a movie that is working through a lot of personal shit.
Oh, yeah.
So it's a movie that, you know, you forgive the lack of what should be more cinematic, I would say. But yeah, as a hardcore drama critic, as a hardcore TV movie critic, I can't ignore that. However, this movie is rewarding. Like you say, that third act is rewarding. It increases your understanding and your empathy towards victims.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Gives you some insight. Like, we have no contact. We have no, I can't imagine
going through
in my own life. So
you have to think it must be therapeutic for the victims of these terrible atrocities to see something, what I must imagine must be so relatable to that circumstance.
Right.
Like you just said, we don't know. We can't relate to it, but it's felt very true to life and very personal. It
gives
personal.
Us a clue. Yeah. It's one of those movies that gives you a clue if, as an audience member.
It's a tough, if you're going to watch it, there is good, there is bad, cinematically speaking.
Right.
Be prepared for a tough watch. Tougher than Paterno, I would say.
Yes, Paterno was all the about the coverage of it,
right,
about the media coverage. This is about the
actual
crimes.
And Paterno was
crimes.
A third party to the crimes.
Yes.
You know,
it's about the cover-up. Somebody it's that about was actually involved. Didn't he cover it up? Yeah, I mean, this is about, was she abused as a kid?
So let's talk about some stuff that's going to be coming to HBO in the coming months here. The first one, obviously, we've mentioned it before, Sharp Objects, a miniseries.
Amy Adams, Patricia Clarkson, Gillian Flynn novel, which I really liked. I listened to that a while back. I listened to a lot of novels. And Gillian Flynn, Gone Girl, I just love what she writes. Dark Places was a much better book than it was a movie with Charlize Theron, even though the movie kind of halfway worked. And I think that's on Amazon Prime right now, Dark Places, if you need another Gillian Flynn kind of fix.
Yeah, that one looked, I haven't seen Dark Places. I remember thinking it looked intriguing, but I remember when the reviews came out, people were generally disappointed.
Really worked as a book. David Fincher took Gone Girl, which may not have worked as a movie under other circumstances, just one of my top five of that year.
Rosamund Pike needs to stay away from me. I filed a restraining order.
What a great book that was, Mike. I just finished it, and it adds so much. Listening to Rosamund Pike's Amy's Diary.
Yeah.
Just flush it out in a fuller novel form, and oh my god, I loved it. And Sharp Objects,
Neil Patrick Harris.
Yeah, I mean, if you need a deep dive before Sharp Objects, you need that good beach read. This is kind of gross. I'm not gonna lie, it's a serial killer book. It's kind of gross. Very early on, you realize she's cutting herself. That's her problem. Amy Adams is an actress that's capable of handling this level of.
Certainly,
drama.
And she's an Academy favorite, and she has range like no other. Like you said, I just saw her in Arrival. She was spectacular in that.
Yes.
I totally saw subtext. The nomination. this one, I don't know. I mean, I don't, you know, we joke about me not doing books. I don't do fiction a lot. I'll do a lot of nonfiction, but I don't know Gillian Flynn from a hole in the wall, but I could just say from the marketing that HBO has done of this, it looks incredibly intriguing, and I don't know how you could, if you're into dark subject matter as
Sophia Lillis going to play a young Amy Adams.
Sure, yeah.
So if you liked It, and if you think Sophia Lillis is a rising star, she gets to work with Amy Adams.
She'll learn a thing or two there?
I think so. Well, I mean, they'll be on the same set. Who knows? Right. They won't work with each other. She'll work with Patricia Clarkson in a bad wig, probably. I hope not. I hope God not. I'm in for this. I mean, it's a mini series. I don't know how many episodes it's going to be.
Yeah,
and it's TV, obviously, not our domain. We will watch this.
Totally excited for it.
A lot of coming soon documentaries. Some of these have just been released, but at the time where I prepared this, here are the five. First is Robin Williams' Come Inside My Mind. What do you think about that one, Mike?
I think it's going to be heavy.
I think
if Gary Shandling was so heavy and they were able to pull it off, I think I would expect more of the same from the Robin Williams.
Now, as a comedian, Robin Williams was a relentless talent in terms of his joke a minute ratio.
He was never off.
He would stuff like,
yeah,
how many jokes in a minute? 8?
And just impression after impression and stuff
when,
from
when he was
God
on,
knows where.
Yeah, when he was on, like that first HBO special, you're laughing. You're almost fatigued.
Right.
You're exhausted. You're laughing so hard.
But again, you talk about how anyone that has, it seems to be true time after time, these amazingly, enormously funny talents have these pain that they're dealing with. And he obviously was suffering from all kinds of mental strife and ended up in him taking his life, and he felt no other way out. And it's, yeah, I'm prepared for it, but I'm prepared to be very saddened.
I'm curious to see how much they touch on the drug abuse from the 80s. I know he was a cocaine guy.
Yeah, so good point.
I'm curious to see what the story behind the story there. Yeah, I'm in. I'm in for that documentary. The next one is Being Serena, about tennis player Serena Williams.
Yeah, and Billie Jean King is the next one on that list, yep, too.
Portrait of a Pioneer.
Getting a lot of tennis use out of their budget there at HBO. Why not? If you're going to talk about two female tennis players.
A couple big years for tennis document. We just previewed the John McEnroe one coming out.
Yeah, we did the McEnroe. Last year was Battle of the Sexes, which is going to be coming out soon on HBO.
Borg versus McEnroe just came on to Hulu, if you're looking for a halfway decent sports
movie.
There you
go. So a lot of tennis stuff going on.
Chia LeBou.
Like I said, if you're going to talk about two female tennis players, you might as well talk about the two probably most impactful ones ever. Serena obviously has won all kinds of stuff, and she's been a pioneer in the fashion industry as well. Billie Jean King stood for all kinds of civil rights and did her share of winning and changed the gender discussion as well, yes, in the Battle of the Sexes. So I probably will end up seeing both of these.
John McCain, For Whom the Bell Tolls. John McCain's getting a documentary from HBO.
What an ominous title, huh?
Yeah.
I mean,
I know he's struggling with cancer.
Yeah, he's got his health issues, but he is certainly a maverick. He coined the phrase. He's one of those old school Republicans that doesn't just vote by party. He was responsible for saving Obamacare and the ACA last year.
Someone I always respected back when. I remember I was I always been in between the parties in my life,
yeah,
growing up in many ways. And I was actually, before I got to know Obama politically, you know, speaking, I was kind of like, I really like John McCain. I really do.
And there's a reason for that, because he's a sensical, rational human being. It's for, by all accounts, despite, you're right, what you think. And obviously it won't appeal to some people, but
honorable man. And servant for decades.
I'm very, very intrigued to see what he has to say.
I will watch this. I will watch this. Another documentary that I'm intrigued by is Believer. The Imagine Dragons frontman looks at the LGBTQ community and their rights in the Mormon church. I think he grew up in Utah, or he's discussing how those people are treated in Utah right now. So this is going to be a heavy documentary. It is just released on HBO. And it's available now. I think Being Serena is also available now.
We have a couple big movies coming out dealing with similar, not the same, but similar. The Miseducation, the
Cameron Post,
Chloe Grace Moretz movie,
Boy Erased. Yep.
It's going to be another one of these. I imagine it's along the same. I don't know what qualifies the lead singer of Imagine Dragons to take this on.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if he's gay or not.
But
We love that music too much.
Especially when it's in the Mission Impossible trailer, I'm in, man. You can't fight the friction. I'm down. I'm in. Let's run into traffic. Has nothing to do with this, but I will watch this. I am curious to see if he can pull it off.
Some coming soon movies. Battle of the Sexes. We reviewed it in our very first episode. Now, I wonder, were we too harsh on this movie when it came out because of its on-the-nose dialogue? Is this something that we could rewatch and enjoy a little bit more than we did the first time?
No.
I wonder because neither of us said this is an F movie. It was like a B-. It was a B.
It's not an Oscar movie. I get your point. Sure. Can you find entertainment value? Maybe.
Emma Stone's great. Andrea Riseborough's great.
I just remember being so disappointed by it in theater.
We were kind of down on it. Speaking of being down on a movie, Justice League. Here's the thing. Justice League, I've seen it in 3D. I've seen it with my brothers who really wanted to like it.
How many dimensions does it take before it's a quality movie?
I want to talk about something here.
All right.
Sorry. Dimensions. Many.
Yeah.
That's right. My answer. Here's the thing about movies like Justice League. I think I have a theory that when people go to the movies, they spend $9 to $15 on a ticket.
Yep.
$9 to $18 some cases. New York, Connecticut. We got to pay a lot for our movies. That's why MoviePass works so well. You pay big money for tickets.
Not for MoviePass.
You got to pay money on a ticket. You got to pay, you know, how much money to buy popcorn and sodas. Okay. Those are expensive. Candies. Sure are.
Yep. I'm with you.
Do you go to dinner beforehand? Do you go to dinner afterwards?
Mm-hmm.
You make a night of it. You make a it's an event. We talk about movie events. So you're pulling out a couple $100 if you got a family of four.
Okay.
Spending a couple $100 on Justice League.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to force yourself to enjoy this movie more than you ought?
I think the opposite. I think if it doesn't live up to your expectations, you're going to just be furious.
Yes, but I also think I have a theory about especially people who want to go and want to have fun at something like this that has some goods.
Mm-hmm.
Like there are goods delivered. Some of the Wonder Woman stuff is really cool. Some of the action sequences really work. Some of them really don't work. Some of the jokes can cause a smirk. But here's the thing. Does that smirk, if you're $200 deep into the night, does that smirk become a guffaw?
See, you're thinking of it as a glass half full type way. I'm thinking of the
I think there are glass half full type people.
If I'm spending that, I demand value for my money. And if I don't get it, I'm going to rip you apart.
So you're the opposite type of person. If you're paying for a big movie night, you need to have a great time,
right,
or it sucks.
Right.
So I think there are a lot of people are that way, and I think some people are the other way where they, I have to like this movie. I guess I kind of like this movie.
But it's not like this got a lot of great publicity and press. It wasn't.
Right.
I mean, it was kind of chastised.
We're halfway into the year. I suck at math. It's month number six.
It is June.
I bought my movie pass in November. I've seen 49 movies on my movie pass.
Yes.
I am less than $3 a movie now.
Yeah.
So for me to go see Justice League on this, I'm less than $3 a movie.
Right. Do you care?
And I'm not a popcorn soda guy, really, for the most part.
Right.
Pizza Hut pizza, that's another story. We went to town on that.
Sure did.
That was a good $10.
Yeah.
And whatever we spent on the soda, $8.
It was a $74 movie night.
But we saw, what, was The Incredibles?
No, that was Hereditary.
Ah. Yeah. Packed some good. So anyway, I think spending so little on Justice League, I could be more like, all right, it's fine. It's like a 50%er. It's like a B- all day, C+. It's a better than average movie experience. It's not great. I didn't hate it, but it doesn't.
You're also not a.
It's not Marvel.
A comic fanboy. I mean, there are people that hold these properties and these IPs in, you know,
and I guess,
deity esteem.
So the glass half full people. Some people will like it. They will bend over backwards to like it. And some people will absolutely hate it if it's not great.
Right.
That's what we talked about, different kinds of people.
I think that's probably a fair assessment.
We talked about you people. That's right. I said you people.
And there seems to be more of
you're one of those two types of you people.
There seems to be more of the latter than there are the former, as far as Justice League is concerned.
Interesting. All right. That was my theory for the day. Kingsman Golden Circle. I hear this sucks.
Where did you hear this from? Because I heard
brother.
It was great.
My brother. I love the first Kingsman.
I've never seen either.
Kingsman. Matthew Vaughn, the kick-ass director. He started out with Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels and Snatch and those British heist movies. Those really fast-edited movies that were really fun.
I had to stop watching Snatch because I had no idea what people were saying. This was early in my movie watching days.
I love Snatch.
Couldn't understand the dialogue.
Rewatching Snatch is a treat.
Yeah, I have to give it another
Lock,
shot.
Lock, Stock, they're trying to find that formula, and I think they found it with Snatch, and then that formula never worked again.
Fair enough.
But It did. It was like a championship window on a good team. Like Dirk Nowitzki had one team.
Right.
That was the Dirk Nowitzki Mavericks, the Pistons year.
You are going,
of
you have analogies on
British gangster
today.
Movies. Yeah. Anyway, Snatch, Matthew Vaughn, kick-ass Matthew Vaughn. He's great at action spectacle, and there is quite the first Kingsman has my brother's favorite scene in the last 10 years in it. Freebird scene.
Okay.
If you think about how hard it is or how much you have to live up to if you use Freebird in a huge action scene.
Sure.
This movie pulls it
off
better than anything.
Now, see,
Colin Firth, my God.
The Golden Circle got it was, apparently it's like a 44 Metascore, so audiences didn't love it, but there were a lot of critics that thought it lived up to the hype of being a worthy sequel.
Well, now you got me
6.8
curious.
6.8 on IMDb.
I love the first one. I'm curious to watch the second one. It's now on HBO. Maybe we do.
Yeah.
The Snowman, Mike. I also hear this one sucked.
Yeah, you're not alone.
Fassbender.
I heard a lot of people not a fan of this. We actually thought it might be Oscar consideration way back when, before it came out, and then it came out to a universally derided acclaim. Nobody liked it.
I tried to listen to this book. I listened to another Joe Nesbo book, and it wasn't great.
Yeah.
It's he's a serial killer series guy as well. I didn't like it. It's like the Millennium series with all the Swedish terminology, all the Swedish words. I think it's written for, you know, it's in that language, yeah, and it's adapted. So it's kind of hard to get.
I'll say this about it, though. My expectations couldn't be lower, so maybe I'll give it a watch and be pleasantly
maybe it's
surprised.
Okay,
right?
Yeah, it's one of those. It's a totally expectations mean everything. That's why we exist. Victoria and Abdul, Dame Judi Dench.
I could not bring myself to watch this. You've seen it?
I've seen it. She's very good in it. Now, this is a mom watch only. If you're a mom, or if you're going to be a mom.
Did you watch this with your mom?
Perhaps.
What a good son you are. As if I don't watch 96% of the movies I watch with my own mother, but go ahead.
I think this is enjoyable. There's a lot of jokes in it. It gets super sappy by the end of it. But
really, it sounds like an action flick.
Dame Judi Dench is really good in this, especially in that first act where she plays this just completely checked out queen of England.
Would you rather rewatch Victoria and Abdul or see The Mountain Between Us?
I would rewatch Victoria and Abdul 100%. Okay. Like The Mountain Between Us, I almost talked about on this one.
Yeah.
I'm not going
to
see it.
My mother went to see The Mountain. I did not. One of the rare movies she saw without me. I told you that she was going to see The Mountain Between Us, and you sent me like an 18 in a row text message diatribe.
That's right, I did.
About how I should never let my mother see that movie.
Yeah, because it was
cancel Kate Winslet.
It was shat upon by the Rotten Tomatoes. We do an Oscar podcast, so we do these highbrow movies, and you're allowing your mother seeing that crappy movie.
Let's go to some rapid fire titles that are on HBO on demand. Atomic Blonde and American Made.
Yeah. Solid movies. If you're looking for that spy thriller action movie, Atomic Blonde by the guys that did John Wick, very strong. American Made, if you want that true, too crazy to be true, Tom Cruise movie about a pilot Tom Cruise. If you like to see him get back.
Does he jump out of high things and run a lot?
Not as many of the stunts, but, you know, if you kind of want that blow, you know, with Johnny Depp.
Yeah.
Tom Cruise movie about drug running and all that. You know, one of those kind of movies. Pretty solid.
We said rapid fire, Mike.
You like Logan?
Yes. Logan was good. We talked about Logan enough times.
Wolverine.
It's an R-rated X-Men flick. How do you not love it? A lot of blood. You finally see. Great story, too. Nominated for an Academy Award.
I saw this right when this is basically us just flowing through the list of HBO movies on their entire catalog, pointing out stuff that we really like.
61 recommend. Was the one by Billy Crystal. It was about the Mickey Mantle and Roger Maris race.
I love this movie.
Me, so did I.
Love it. And I'm a Yankee fan. I can't help myself. That's
the thing, though.
But
it speaks to us. It's a cop out almost.
Good God, it's a great movie.
Because it's a movie for Yankee fans, about Yankee fans, by a Yankee fan, and Billy Crystal.
Yankees.
Yeah.
Beat the Red Sox. The Full Monty was in our second episode, 1997 Best Picture Retrospective. It is now on HBO Go. This was a pleasant surprise.
Yeah,
for
we
us.
Both were expecting just male dicks across the board.
We were literally upside down on the couch. I don't want to watch it.
You're right. It was a pleasant surprise. It was a solid story.
They're grabbing at their underwear straps the whole movie.
Right.
Almost. Am I going to pull it down? Am I not? And we're just like, gah!
I wouldn't have hated to see Tom Wilkinson's penis.
Anyway,
play it out there.
You don't have to worry. Men out there, schmoes, heteros,
whatever. How about just anyone that hates penises?
Anybody that hates penises, the dick ruins their day. You don't have to worry. Going clear.
Dick ruins their day.
Bums you out.
This is going to be our last episode. Going clear, Scientology documentary. Great documentary. Terrifying documentary.
Terrifying. I'm not a squirrel, but I like this movie.
Yeah, it's definitely worth a watch.
I think that's the definition of being a squirrel. I think we're in trouble.
We are. There's no doubt. If
we
not
have
for
no
this,
fans in
then
Utah.
For something else.
We have no fans in Utah thus far that I know
and
of.
Neither apparently do the Imagine Dragons after this.
All right.
Whitney, the documentary that we've talked about, the first right? Not the Oscar contender.
The 2015, yeah. 2016 doc on HBO there, yes. If you've listened to our 1992, 93? Is that the beginning of Lion King?
I think it was Yellow Ledbetter.
No, Whitney Houston does a little bit better, or slightly better job of it.
Speak for yourself.
if you've watched American Psycho a bunch, if you've seen The Bodyguard,
yes. There's a 2018 Whitney documentary coming out. We've talked about a couple times that a lot of people think is going to be worthy of Best Documentary Feature. Our worry has always been, well, this one already exists. How much different content can there be? So if you plan on seeing the 2018 one, like I do, I have not yet seen the 2015 version. I want to go back and watch this one, but you've seen it already.
And this one covers a lot of stuff. It's a worthwhile documentary. It gets very, 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 very sad.
Of course.
FYI. Yeah. So you see the music if you want to replay some of the hits. If you love Whitney Houston so much and you're waiting for the new doc and maybe you don't like being spoiled and you don't like being fatigued on subject matter, maybe just listen to a couple Whitney Houston albums. Or our 1992 half episode.
Or if you want to just hear songs, just ask me. I'll sing them.
I've been curious to see Bessie.
I know nothing about this. Yeah, it's a D. Reese one. Auteur of Mudbound, obviously the adaptation.
Starring Queen Latifah. Movie about Bessie Smith. It's been on my list forever. I have to watch this. Dee Reese has been making really good, strong movies for a while as a writer and a director, a true auteur there. And it's been awesome that she's doing Netflix movies and HBO movies. And
TVMA rating, 6.6 out of 10 on 3,000 plus reviews on IMDb. Solid score. Anything in that 7-ish range is doing pretty well for itself.
Yes. Terrible transitions here. I thought Euro Trip and Semi-Pro are dumb comedy fun. You ever see those movies, Mike?
Euro Trip. I went on a Scotty Doesn't Know deep dive the other night. That's how sad my life is. Surprisingly, it wasn't on a date.
Perhaps the greatest cameo of all time.
Most surprising, for sure. Matt Damon has basically a career of just surprising cameos. What was she? Unsane. He just pops up.
Thor Ragnarok.
Yeah, hilarious. But Eurotrip, great fun, stupid fun. Semi-Pro is not funny on the first watch.
Right.
And then, like, 3 months will pass, and you'll think of one line from that movie, and you'll start laughing. Then you're like,
everybody love everybody.
I need to rewatch Semi-Pro. And then you'll die laughing. So watch Semi-Pro once, get it out of your system, and then wait 3 months.
When they're all in the mascot outfits,
yes.
And they're doing the dance, and the dancing is like the seahorses.
Yeah.
It kills me.
It's hysterical.
Bootsy dancing in a seahorse costume.
And I remember I watched it for the first time in theaters, and I walked out, I'm like, that might be Will Ferrell's worst movie. And then I saw the second time, couldn't stop laughing.
Hysterical. All the stuff with Woody Harrelson, good God. Lady Macbeth is another slow burn of a drama. This one gets under your skin. I thought it had a chance at some Oscars. Florence Pugh was widely touted as an early Oscar contender last year, perhaps at this time. I saw this one in a little tiny theater for an independent films. And like I'm doing now,
around you?
Hearts beat loud. No, It was not. It was. I think it was just like me in the theater. And it was funny. I don't
Did
know
you
I,
wear pants?
It's just me in the theater. And these two women walk in. And one of the girls just says to me, "You're in my seat."
That's funny.
That was very funny. I was like, I laughed out loud. And then they proceeded to talk throughout the whole movie without me getting mad at them.
Right, of course.
During this,
as long as you bring the goods.
Horrifying drama. And yeah, no, but they were funny. Anyway. This one time, these two women were funny in a movie theater. I just thought I'd tell that story.
That's a too long, didn't read type thing on Reddit.
Anyway.
This Lady half Macbeth, episode has gone way too long, by the way.
Lady Macbeth, not a funny movie. Man on the Moon was a solid rewatch, Mike, especially after that Jim Carrey doc, Jim and Andy on Netflix.
I don't have much to say about it. Go rewatch Man on the Moon. It's really quite well done. I don't think it got enough recognition at the time because people weren't ready to take Jim Carrey seriously for whatever reason, but he did a more than solid job, and he's Andy Kaufman in this movie.
Right, watch Jim and Andy, yeah. Watch Man on the Moon again.
Pitch Black, underrated movie, Vin Diesel.
I liked it a lot.
I don't know if movie. I did.
I think it's good, it kind
of
stands
You're
up.
You're in the majority, there are a lot of people that swear by this movie.
Yeah, I rewatched it the last 5 years, I think. Yes, perhaps. And it was good.
Is Riddick come out of this?
Riddick comes out of this, yeah. But this was better. This was really strong, visually very, very strong. Silence of the Lambs is up there, Michael. We just did a full retrospective on the 1991-92 Best Actress campaign.
It's one of the greatest performances of all time. Two of the greatest performances of all time. One of the greatest movies of all time.
This will suck you in.
One of the greatest screenplays. Last movie to sweep the Big Five at the Oscars with the screenplay.
For a good reason.
Lead thespian, director, and picture. Go watch it, then go listen to our retrospective on it.
Are some of those scenes all-timers? We gushed about it. No question. In our retrospective.
Yeah. Don't watch Hannibal.
Yeah.
I just rewatched Hannibal because we just did the Silence of the Lambs thing.
Sure, you said that.
Hannibal I saw for the first time when it came out in 2001. I was a young whippersnapper. I didn't like it then. I thought maybe with time it would have gotten more to appreciate out of it. It's not great.
Yeah,
it's
know if Ridley Scott is at the mercy of his screenplays or not. Usually he's hit and miss his whole career. Yeah. Speaking of Ridley Scott, we have all the Alien movies, franchise movies on HBO. Mike, will you rewatch any of these?
The hell out of me with watching Covenant because you didn't like it. You were so vehemently against it.
I really didn't like
it. And I've had it lined up to hit play on literally four or five times in the last week, and I just never have done it.
Well, it might be a pleasant surprise. Like, you might, I mean, there's some good stuff in there. It is patently absurd because there's pathogens floating through the air, and like the second they walk out of the spaceship without space gear on, I'm thinking they're the stupidest people in the world, and they're astronauts. Give me a break. So dumb. So that is immediately dumb. I don't know. I probably won't rewatch any of these because I've seen them 100,000 times. Alien and Aliens are perhaps my
two favorites. I can't get through number three either. I just
David Fincher
never
one. Yeah, it's not great.
I want to. I gotta try it, but I just can't do it.
So the Harry Potter movies.
Yeah.
The Harry Potter movies are up on HBO. I know Binge Mode.
Expecto Pius.
The Binge Mode is doing a whole reread of the Harry Potter books, which I must say, I think about 3 years ago, during the holidays, for 4 months, I went at one audiobook after another of the Harry Potter series. Yep. I never was into it as a kid growing up. The audiobook listens are phenomenal if you're an Audible fan. Then I watched the movies after that, which were solid, okay. I'm not, like, thrilled with any one movie, even though I thought the last one was pretty darn satisfying.
Yeah, the finale is good. There's highlights in the series. It's a fine enough watch. Right. I know that's sacrilege to some people who swear by it and think it's, like, the greatest movie set ever.
I thought the books are so much better than the movies.
That seems to be the general consensus.
So I have no, like, urge to rewatch these. Or how about you?
I've rewatched them not too long ago, so it's...
Is that a wizard cape you have on now? That is. That's what that is.
I'm trying to turn you into a toad this whole recording.
Die Hard movies are on HBO, Mike.
The progression of these movies is just insane.
I hated the second
one. It's so American.
An airpoint.
You hated the second Die Hard?
I hated it.
I loved it. I think it's underrated.
Maybe.
You go from a man who's just trying to save his girlfriend and wife, and it happens to unfoil this plot, to like Bruce Willis is single-handedly taking down a jet in like the fourth or fifth one. It just gets out of control, but it's Die Hard.
Man versus jet.
Right.
Jet landed on the ground. Man fights jet.
Yeah, that's stupid. The fourth or fifth movie.
Right.
But yeah, it's Die Hard. The first three are great.
Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. Honey, I Blew Up the Kid.
I want to see these remade as a horror film.
Good. Great subject matter for that. The Thomas Schulman.
Yeah.
Public Enemy number one on this podcast. Ruined that possibility of ever happening for Disney.
Dick.
I was big into these as a child, my brothers and I. They're on HBO now. Maybe, again, if I was a channel surfing kind of dude, maybe I'd do it. Speaking of kids movies, a couple of the Lego movies are up. Lego Batman.
Lego Batman is awesome.
Lego Ninjago.
I've never seen it.
What is a Ninjago? Didn't you ask me that at one point in this podcast?
Yeah. Do we have an answer? Do we know?
I do not know. That is it. That is the HBO On Demand.
And you wanted to do all the On Demand movies?
Mid-year coverage. A lot of stuff I write, Mike, it goes long.
We said this was a half episode. We're 3 hours into this. Yeah, that's all the movies that we have for HBO, the on-demand mid-year report. Like we said, we just wanted to go through, highlight some of our favorites, highlight some stuff that we would stay away from, we would go to. Let us know if you caught anything on there, if we convince you to watch anything or stay away from anything, or if you completely disagree with us or agree with us, hit us up, Mike, Mike, and Oscar on Facebook, Mike, Mike, and Oscar on Instagram, MM, and Oscar on Twitter, Mike, Mike, and Oscar at gmail.com, Mike, Mike, and Oscar.com. Anywhere you hear podcasts, you type us in, you'll see our smiling faces waving at you.
iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Google, the new Google. Google's got some new digs there on Android especially.
New podcast app for Android users. We're on there.
Yeah, please leave us a review if you can. Those really help us grow the audience organically. And yeah, let us know what you're watching on HBO. It's not TV, so that's why we reviewed it. It is HBO. We also like some series there, but we focused on the movies and we went this long.
Yeah, yeah. Watch Barry. Barry was good. I watched Barry. It's a good show.
Oh, okay, cool.
What's that on that? You got any words of wisdom to part with?
Wisdom out. All right. I've never had wisdom.
Reality sucks, guys. Keep watching movies with us. We'll check you out next time.
See ya.